listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You know, we live in a world that demonizes emotions. If you feel depressed or angry or jealous, someone is likely to ask you, "What's wrong with you?" Today, you have a chance to change the way you look at emotions, to realize what a friend your emotions are to you, no matter how negative you may be told they are. Today on Full Power Living, we're looking at the language of emotions with author and educator Carla McLaren. Full Power Living has the aim of helping you to know and understand the power and importance of human emotions. So whether you're listening over Blog Talk Radio or EmotionalPro.com, I would like to invite you to join our chat with your questions and comments. And you can also call toll-free on 888-498-0570. Carla McLaren has a master's degree in education. She's an award-winning author, a social science researcher, and a pioneering educator whose empathic approach to emotions revalues even the most negative emotions and opens startling new pathways into the depths of the soul. She's the founder and CEO of Emotion Dynamics, LLC, and her lifelong work has been focused on the creation of a grand unified theory of emotions, which we'll be exploring a bit today. She's developed this through her work with survivors of dissociative trauma, through her own lifelong experience as a hyper-empath, and through extensive research into the social and biological sciences. Her applied work, Dynamic Emotional Integration, is a non-clinical approach to emotional awareness that can be used by individuals, couples, and families, and in schools, in the workplace, as well as in therapeutic settings. She's the author of The Art of Empathy, A Complete Guide to Life's Most Essential Skill, and the one we're discussing today, The Language of Emotions, What Your Feelings Are Trying to Tell You. She also has a multimedia online course, Emotional Flow, Becoming Fluent in the Language of Emotions. Carla has taught at the University of San Francisco, Omega Institute, Naropa University, Kripalu Center, Hollyhock Learning Center, and the Association for Humanistic Psychology. Carla McLaren, it is indeed an honor to welcome you to Full Power Living.
Thank you so much, Eileen. Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning to you. So emotions are with us 24/7. They never go away. They hold tons of energy. In fact, my belief is they are energy. And we know that energy neither grows nor goes. It just is. So we can't get rid of emotions. And we also have learned that holding on to them doesn't work. And our attempts to give them away usually don't work either. So, you know, these are strange things that we have. What are some of the basic things we need to know about emotions in order to understand their language and use them effectively?
I think the most important thing, and if I had read this before I wrote The Language of Emotions, it would have been a shorter book, but the neuroscientist of emotion, Antonio Damasio, calls emotions, and this is a mouthful, action requiring neurological programs. Uh-huh. Meaning their programs, they are reliable, they are the same program each time, and each time they arise, there's an action required. I realized after reading that is how I've been approaching emotions since forever, is, okay, emotion, here you are, what do you need, and what's your purpose, and what's your gift, how you doing?
Emotion?
That each emotion arises for a very specific reason, and it arises in response to very specific stimuli. So each emotion is coming forward for a specific reason that is meant to help you become a socially successful primate. That's the idea. But for many people, when emotions come forward, they sort of lose their skills, and they become more primate than human. And so I think this is, you know, you said most of the things that we hear about emotions is that they're negative and unwanted, and, you know, they're less than the intellect, they're less than spirituality, they're less than everything you can think of. So mm-hmm. the emotions are very much in the shadow. They're kind of behind the door and under the rug. But as you know, they don't stay there.
Right. And they don't stop working even when they're under the rug. They still influence you.
They just work in a muffled way.
Right. Right. And create all kinds of havoc.
Yeah. And most of the things we've learned to do with emotions, we've learned to see them in this way that they're just, you know, they're just a handful, and you got to deal with them, you got to live through them, and then, you know, whatever, they'll go away. Uh-huh. But by treating emotions as these unwanted things, we don't develop skills with them at all. We develop around our emotions, beside our emotions, in spite of our emotions, but we don't really develop emotional awareness and emotional skill on the terms of emotions. We try to move around and get away and sidle away from them. Uh-huh. And what I'm saying is, yeah, do that and get back to me. Tell me how that worked for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's really so. And, you know, I just love your constant emphasis in the language of emotions that, you know, you need to step into your emotions. You need to explore them. You need to accept them. You need to bring them into you. And in contrast, our culture says, oh, no, send them away, get rid of them. And one of the things I learned years ago is it's impossible to get rid of your emotions. You can't do it. They're part of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And they have such important information.
Yes.
That getting rid of them kind of makes you less effective and less aware and less, yeah, less happy.
And less peaceful. I know you have a chapter on stress. And certainly you're a lot more peaceful. You know, this ties in with something we're aware, so many of us, and we've talked about it on this program before, that it's time for us humans to start living consciously, to be aware of what happens to us, to make conscious decisions about what's occurring in life. And your aim in teaching the language of emotions is to help people live more consciously. What's that look like to you, living consciously with emotions?
For me, it's befriending emotions, just as we befriend, you know, for those of us whose spirituality is centered, we've befriended the idea. For those of us whose bodies are working well, or we are working well with our bodies, we have befriended them. It is becoming a friend to not only the world, but to the inner world. And when an emotion comes up, not throwing a lot of shouldn'ts and whys onto it, but welcoming the emotion. As the poet Rumi said 800 years ago, open the door laughing and invite them in, for each has been sent as a gift and a guide from beyond.
Yes. And that quote's in your book, too, I remember.
Yeah.
The system that you work with regarding emotions, and the one we're mm-hmm. talking about today, is you developed as a result of your own pain and mm-hmm. Your life as an empath, your empathic mm-hmm. abilities. And so I'd like you to give our listeners a picture of how you started to work in this area of trying to restore our native language of emotions to us humans.
As a hyperempathic person, and you might also call that a very sensitive person or a hypersensitive person, I was always aware of emotions and also nuance and subtext and undercurrents and social space and interactions and body language, gestural language. For me, watching people was an incredibly noisy situation of watching everything that was going on between people that other people wouldn't really notice. and or were taught to ignore. And so for me, there wasn't really an option to ignore it. I also wasn't able to ignore emotion. Mine were intense and sort of explosive, and some of them obviously were also shut down completely. I survived early childhood trauma, and for many children, that turns on their hypersensitivity and hyperempathy because they've got to be able to read a social situation like nobody's business, you mm-hmm. know, to keep themselves as safe as can be in a dangerous environment. Mm. So for me, my early experience meant that I was on fire most of the time with other people's social and emotional cues and with my own. So mm-hmm. for me, learning the language of emotions was not an option. You know,
right.
I'm going to see if I can get to this in 40 years. No, I had to learn it because
right.
otherwise I was, you know, I was going to fall apart. And I did fall apart. I was, as is true for many children who are molested, I, you know, entered into severe major depression and suicidal urges and that stuff at the age of 10. And so the suicide and severe depression grew up with me. You know, they are things I know very well.
Wow.
I say today that my brain gets an A+ in depression.
Wow.
I don't know what I get for that, but I do get high marks.
Wow. That's a mouthful. Well, my own early experiences left me to just be eaten up with anger, and as a single parent, I realized that I had to do something about that anger, and that I couldn't find anybody had in the therapeutic field anyway. People didn't work with anger by itself so that you could understand it. They combined it, you know, oh, when you have bipolar disorder, you get angry. But they weren't telling you what anger was and what you could do about it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think Harriet Lerner came along.
Yes.
70s or 80s, like, thank you, Harriet, thank you, you know,
yeah.
talking specifically about anger. And that's what I found is that if you want to find out about emotions, you can learn about them one at a time in some people's books, and some people have really good information, but they don't talk about the rest of them.
Right.
And generally, they're picking off emotions as, here's the most problematic one, let's talk about it. And, you know, there's a contest among the emotions of which one is most hated. I would say jealousy and envy are the most despised, but hatred is hated, and, you know, most people have really strong reactions to their emotions, so the poor emotion comes up with its gift and its information, and then people have shame about that emotion, then they get angry that they're ashamed, and then they, you know, then they get depressed that they're angry and ashamed, and the poor original emotion is like, Can a guy get a break around here?
Right.
I have something
I'm
to just say.
Trying to tell you something. Right.
I'm trying to tell you something. What is going on?
Right. Right. Well, you have qualities or skills in empathy that I would like to just explore a little bit. They include. The ones that you list in the language of emotions include grounding, defining
mm-hmm,
our
mm-hmm.
boundary, burning contracts, conscious complaining, which I love, and
I love
rejuvenating.
It.
So, well, I have a system that I developed some years ago that I call the gross out, which I think is compatible with conscious complaining. Tell us a little bit about how these skills can help us to work with emotions.
Most of these skills help people downregulate and self-soothe so they can calm themselves down, focus themselves, and listen to emotions as themselves without throwing nine other emotions on top of it and getting themselves completely confused. As you know, most emotions, except for the happiness, contentment, and joy, most emotions require some kind of a practice. In a culture where we really weren't raised to understand or deal with emotions very well, each emotion requires a practice, and part of that practice is mindfulness. And I call those the empathic mindfulness skills because they are in-the-moment skills that you can use anywhere and at any time. to refocus yourself and get yourself back to center. I think a lot of meditation skills that I learned when I was younger, you have to go somewhere and sit on a pillow and be with a group of people and take an hour. And emotions come up every second, pretty much.
Yes.
You know? So I was like, excuse me. I would live on a pillow, basically, in a closed room. So I needed to create skills that you could use on the fly. And grounding and focusing are ones that help people stay with me. You know, stay with me, pal. Help people become a more peaceful place for emotions to arise and be heard. Conscious complaining is wonderful because there are times when you really need to say, look, this is awful, and I am not happy here, and I don't think I'm doing a good job. And it's hard for other people to hear that. They would want to fix it. They wouldn't want you to be able to just say what's true for you. So conscious complaining is a way to speak about what's true, and it's got a beginning, middle, and end. There is care around conscious complaining, so you're not just, you know, riling yourself up for no good reason. It's not exactly cathartic. Rather, it's just telling the truth of the emotions that are occurring at that moment. So each of the skills is a way to help people strengthen and soften themselves so that they can listen more clearly to emotions and that they can recover their resilience much more quickly. Mm-hmm.
In terms of conscious complaining, as you were talking, I remembered years ago I went to a lecture by an Indian yogi, and he was talking about the path to freedom being facing fact. And essentially, he's talking about looking at whatever you're looking at squarely and for what it is and not what you've been told or what you imagine and so forth. And that conscious complaining sounds a lot like that. Like you're going, okay, well, what exactly is going on here? How exactly do I feel right now? And, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, really, it's great. Kind of a way to scan, yeah. And what I notice about it is when people do it, it will, you would think you would just be griping and whining, but when your emotions know that you're listening, a lot of times you'll get very far with something. So you'll say, you know, I can't believe she treated me that way, and I'm really cranky, and all of a sudden you remember, you know, a third grade teacher who told you you weren't a very good artist, and that's where that's from.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that I missed my cue a few minutes ago, which was to really bring forth, and something I mentioned to you when we spoke briefly yesterday on the phone, which is that the system you're offering is a comprehensive system, meaning two different emotions, but you work with them essentially the same way through the same process, and they all fit together, and the system makes sense. And so I missed my cue to emphasize that. I think that's really a key aspect of what you're presenting in the language of emotions.
Oh, thank you. Yes, yeah. I was definitely looking for, a grand unified theory of emotion, that treating them as a system, as a system with its own intelligence is the way that I've been able to, and then accessing that intelligence in an emotionally intelligent way, rather than bringing in, you know, some kind of hyper-rationality to tell the emotions why you shouldn't be scared, you know, what to be angry about. A lot of the ways that we've learned to use our emotions and our intellect together is to take the intellect, give it a bat, and smack the emotions on the head with it.
That's very, very descriptive, I think. I can see that right away. The one thing that was difficult for me, though, when I go back and review it, I understand it, but then I don't hold on to it, is the part where you talk about burning contracts. I don't quite follow that. So will you go over that? That's one of the empathic skills, one of the things you do. Okay.
Yeah. Do we have time before the break?
No, let's take a break first. Now
okay.
that you mention it. Whose show is this anyway? You're doing a great job. All right. I learned this morning that I don't have a mean bone in my body, so there's no meanness to that. All right. Thank you, Producer Robin. I'm talking today with the author of The Language of Emotions, What Your Feelings Are Trying to Tell You, Carla McLaren. If you're angry or depressed, or you know someone who is, we're going to be talking with Carla about what anger and depression are trying to tell us when we return here on Full Power Living. Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. So that's interesting to have that particular ad as we step into talking with Carla McLaren about our emotions. Before we get started, I have a few announcements. Next week on Full Power Living, I'm talking with Barbara Fleischer and Thelma Reese about reinventing ourselves past midlife when I talk with them about their book, The New Senior Woman. So listen next Thursday, June 25th, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, for my conversation with Thelma Reese and Barbara Fleischer. Also, please register at emotionalpro.com to receive our twice-weekly newsletter, in which we keep you up to date on all the shows and the topics that we have for you here on Full Power Living. So I'm talking today with Carla McLaren, who teaches dynamic emotional integration in an online education and licensing program. And before the break, Carla, I was asking you to describe this process that you talk about, this skill of burning contracts.
Burning contracts is something that I borrowed from, from some early training I got, kind of psychic healing of all things. It was a very interesting process where you can use your imaginal skills, your capacity to imagine and envision things, to treat your behaviors as things that you decided to do and things that you can now decide to let go of. And so, for instance, let's say that my self-identification is that I'm no good at math. With burning contracts, you can sort of put that up, and you do this all with imagination, although many people will use actual pieces of paper. And I would look at not good at math and see what comes up. And I may find in that process, it's a meditative process, it's a self-awareness process, I may start feeling a lot of emotion about that, and I look at each of the emotions. So I might feel tremendous grief, which is different than sadness, and then I may feel some anger, I might feel some fear, and try to ask each of the emotions, what is going on in this not good at math ideology that I've picked up from somewhere? Is it true, or did I get it from somebody? And you can go through and then put all that emotion, all that information that your psyche brings forward in that process, and make a decision about whether you still want to identify with that belief, and roll up the contract, burn it, you know, with imagination or in the actual world, or tear it up or do whatever it is to show your entire psyche and all of your emotions, I realized that this is an idea that I had that really doesn't work for me anymore, and to let the whole psyche see we're moving on from that. It sounds funny, but when I saw it, I realized that I could take a great number of the things that I learned in my my molestation experience, which happened when I was 3, and developing language and developing my idea of who I was and my idea of what my gender expression was going to be and how I fit in the world. And the information that I got, the social training that I got in my abuse was horrendous. It was unlivable. It was completely unacceptable.
Right.
And what I found in Burning Contracts is even though I was so young when it happened, my sense of this is wrong and this is an injustice was fresh. And I was able to use those powerful emotions to actually disentangle myself from that early social training, which was so toxic.
Wow. So
it's a fascinating process.
Yeah. So, now, recently I've really talked with a lot of people about bringing up beliefs that you hold in your subconscious and releasing those.
Yes.
That's similar to that process, is it not? Identifying
yes.
what's inside and then letting it go?
Yes, and then trusting the emotions that come up at whatever level of intensity. And during the period when I was burning contracts with all of the things I learned in my in that early horrific abuse experience, the outside of my soul sounded like the 1812 Overture.
I mean,
things
were
blowing up all over the place. And I was able to use that rage and that even, you know, panic and terror and suicidal urge, grabbing onto those and utilizing their energy to get rid of that stuff that was foreign and toxic to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very powerful process.
It certainly is. Yes, I got that. but culturally, now we generally don't look at our emotions, as you so well point out in The Language of Emotions. We tend to either dissociate or distract ourselves. We drink, we smoke, we shop, we talk incessantly, we overeat, anything to keep us from stopping long enough to feel. And what's your understanding? Is it just that we haven't learned about them? Why do we dissociate or distract instead of dealing with the emotions, which once you deal with them, you can move on to something else?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the funny thing is people think, you know, I'm not going to cry because if I cry, I'm going to cry, you know, for the rest of my life. And you find you actually can't. You know, you'll cry for a while and then you'll be like, you'll start laughing. You're like, why am I crying so much?
Right.
You know, it's like the emotions have a time limit. They, as action requiring neurological programs, if you complete the action, the emotion goes, okay, and then recedes as it should.
Uh-huh.
I think a problem is, yes, we don't have a vocabulary for our emotions. We aren't taught about them as children. We aren't taught about them in school. Ever, except if we're doing emotions that are not acceptable, we'll be pulled out of the class and taken to the principal or someone else. So if we're having a lot of fear, a lot of anger, you know, if we're very high level with our happiness and joy, we'll also be pulled aside. So emotions are treated as interruptions to our lives and to our day, and we aren't given any skills for them except for anger. Use your words.
Yeah, right.
Like a kid's got all this intense, you know, rage. Use your words. Here's my words, pal.
Right.
I think one of the things that still surprises me is that The Language of Emotions is the only book that talks about all the emotions in one place in terms of how to work with them.
Yes.
And it's used in a couple of universities in the counseling, the Masters of Counseling program, because it's the only book I mean, there's a lot of books out there in the world. Mm-hmm. There's billions of books, and this is the only one that talks about all the emotions. That says a lot about how we treat emotions.
Yes. Yeah. You know, once, probably about 15 years ago, I had someone in my office survey 17 different colleges and universities offer master's degree programs for marriage and family therapists. And
yes.
we asked this question: do you now or have you ever taught a standalone course on anger? Not one had ever done it.
No. No. Or a standalone course on anything.
Yep.
You know, any emotion.
Any real emotion, yeah.
Yeah. How about jealousy and envy?
Nope.
Who wants that? We want to get rid of it.
Who wants that? Yeah. If you don't think about them, they won't happen.
I know that's true. No, I'm the only one in the world that doesn't have emotions like envy and jealousy.
I know, no. Me too.
So, but that brings up a point that every emotion does have a different message for us, and when it does appear, it's attempting to tell us something. It's attempting to guide us, and you know, like you're saying, you go into more than 15 everyday emotions, and also states that we get ourselves in, like stress. And that's really so helpful. And not only that, you follow the same process as we were saying before. It's an integrated thing. What's this emotion trying to tell us? What questions are inherent in the middle of the question that you need to ask of the question? Mm-hmm. What happens when it gets stuck in you? What can you do when you encounter it in somebody else? I mean, you take people through the same process with every one of these emotions. It's really wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to pose a we have a question here. Hang on a minute. We got a question from a caller who would like us to pose it for her. I'm a 35-year-old single woman, never been married, and have a speech impediment. I find that the last few years I get angrier and angrier at people and circumstances. I mean, I get frustrated easily and snap at family and loved ones more and more. I don't know why I get so upset over everything. I feel like nothing is fair, and I know that it's irrational, but I can't seem to stop myself or the anger. Is there anything I can do to calm myself down? People are starting to notice that I'm becoming the cranky woman. I pray that I will not have these feelings, but it doesn't help. Perfect question, huh?
Yeah. Now, the word fairness. Fairness lives in the area of jealousy and envy. It certainly lives in anger as well. But jealousy and envy, when they are their healthy selves, are about the fair distribution of resources and loyalty and love, jealousy more in the area of love and attention, and envy more in the area of resources. A single woman, which is an interesting self identification. So that would feel to me, and I could be wrong, but that would feel to me as if there is an expectation that the person would not be single. So we're in the area of fairness about other people finding relationships, that sort of thing, especially when we're talking in the family. So some people call anger a secondhand emotion, and this makes my anger go, anger's job is to protect the sense of self, and it arises when your sense of self is offended against or challenged in some way. And for many people, the energy of anger comes and they look for a weapon rather than understanding that anger is trying to help them feel strong enough to be vulnerable so that they can speak their truth. So what I would say in a person who's having a lot of anger and a sense of unfairness is use the grounding practice. get focused and ask the question for the emotions rather than exploding out onto other people is go inward and talk to the emotions about what's going on. On my website, CarlaMcLaren.com, I have a place where you can go and read about jealousy and envy and anger and see what the questions are for those. They're all extremely important emotions, and they have wonderful things to say to you. And they tell the truth.
Yes, they definitely do. Okay, so now we have one on the chat. Relating to emotions separately would be like relating to our liver or brain or right arm as if they're not a part of the whole system, which leads me to ask Carla to speak about how emotions interact with our body.
Constantly. They are in our body. They are a part of our brain. And I do agree, talking about emotions separately is bizarre because that's not how they behave and that's not how they arise and that's not how they work. When I was little, I would look at people and I would see visually all of their emotions at once. And for me, that's how they work. They are always there. Some move forward and become more obvious and some move back, you know, depending. But they are always there because they're a part of our basic cognition and our basic social skills and our basic, you know, physical structure. So the emotions are always present and working with each other. So when people call anger a secondhand emotion, it's because they'll often see anger stepping out in front of emotions that a person doesn't feel that they can feel at that moment. For instance, jealousy, envy, sadness. Sadness, especially because it's an emotion that drops your boundaries and it makes you very vulnerable. And a lot of times, that is not safe in a social environment. You know, your anger will jump out in front of that sadness and, you know, sort of set a boundary. And people would then, you know, look at anger as if it wasn't, you know, if it was a lie or something. Well, if you're really sad, then why are you angry right now? And so anger gets a lot of, you know, anger's kind of a whipping boy. And to look at the anger and say, no, 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 the anger is trying to set a boundary, okay, around this situation where if you cried, you would lose face. It is not safe for you to cry right now. So thank you, anger, and let's go deal with this in a different way. Don't snap at everybody, okay? Let's go and talk about this. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's very good. What are some of the things, Carla, that you often offer? You just mentioned your website, CarlaMcLaren.com, and I posted it on both of the chats. You have a video course. You have the book. You have the discussion or some information about jealousy and envy. What else do you have available, and how can people get your book?
The book is available everywhere. Books are sold.
Everywhere. Okay.
Everywhere. Books are sold. And you can also link through on my site. I think I've got a place. The publisher has a good deal on the book right now, but sometimes Amazon and the publisher are within a couple of cents of each other. So the site, I created it. You know, when you have a website, you can look at your analytics and see how people are getting there. Right, what are people putting into their search field before they get to your site? And I started noticing that the internet is sending me people who write things like, why emotions what? I can't go on. Suicide, you know, just single words. Terror. And so I think the internet has decided this is the place for people in emotional despair and trouble. So I quickly took that note, and so I put a lot of material on the website. So you can go to a tab called Featured Topics and go down and find all of my work on empathy and emotions, and each emotion has its own post. And so knowing how much pain people are in, I made sure that if they got there, if the internet sent them to me, that there would be something there for them. So there's stuff on how to work with depression and how to work with anger, suicidal urge, panic, all of the big guys. Yeah. And I also have a new training program and licensing program called In Dynamic Emotional Integration. Mm-hmm. And we're running the first cohort now, and the second cohort will start in October.
Wow. You also have worked in prisons. You've offered this material in prisons and where else? You worked, that was the William James Foundation, mm-hmm. as an arts mm-hmm. educator. And mm-hmm. You use a lot of ritual, singing, drumming, drama mm-hmm. in working with people. Talk to me about that a bit.
What I find is because we have not been taught how to work with our emotions, how to speak of them and how to speak to them, a lot of our emotional awareness is underground. A lot of our empathic awareness is underground. And it lives primarily in art and in ritual. And we have a natural skill for both art and ritual, although a lot of us are trained out of our artistic selves. You know, we say, oh, I can't sing, I'm not an artist, I don't know how to do that. Well, you did when you were little. Art is a natural, flowering of the emotional self and the empathic self. So I tend to work with art and ritual to help people get past all that terrible training that they've gotten about emotions, or the total lack of training they've gotten about mm-hmm. emotions. Mm-hmm. And I find you can, by taking the words out and working with the more wordless, you know, nonverbal parts of people, you can get to the emotional truths more quickly and in a safe way.
Mm-hmm. And very deeply, I'm sure, also. Well, we're up to our second break here, and while I've never considered suicide myself, you've mentioned suicidal urges many times, and certainly as a therapist the last 43 years, I've encountered a lot of people who are talking about suicide, so that's what I'd like to talk about when we return here on Full Power Living. We're talking today with empath and award-winning author Carla McLaren about the language of emotions. We'll be right back.
Eileen Dillon is a certified senior life mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. She's available to conduct mentoring sessions with you to help you understand, change, and evolve using the advice of your own higher self. You can be anywhere in the world. Sessions are conducted through Skype. For more information about these life mentoring sessions, fees, and how to register, go to www.emotionalpro.com and click on the mentoring link at the top. Get personally tailored assistance with your toughest life questions. Visit mentoring@emotionalpro.com today.
Welcome back. The Language of Emotions author Carla McLaren is my guest today. She's helping all of us to understand what our feelings are trying to tell us. And Carla, I know we mentioned we'll talk about suicide or suicidal urges, but before we do that, you do a lot of talking about emotional traumas, and you mentioned that you had them in your life. Certainly, I had many in my life also, and they play a big part in a lot of people's emotional lives. Can you talk mm-hmm. about emotional traumas, please?
It seems to me that life is a series of emotional traumas. And I guess separating them out from physical and sexual trauma. For instance, in the earlier example that I gave of a third grade teacher telling you you weren't a good artist, that's not just an emotional trauma. That's sort of a trauma to your sense of self and your vision of who you might one day be. We seem to hit up against a lot of trauma in this world. And I think the solution, if that's a terrible word, anyway, the point to trauma is developing resilience so that you can come back from the trauma. And that's what these empathic mindfulness skills are about, are developing resilience so that you can deal with what happened listen to the emotions that arise and work through it in such a way that you are not having post-traumatic stress, you know, reactions around that trauma, but rather you understand it and you become a person who experienced that, survived it, and can possibly help others survive as well.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I'd like to mention for all of you who are listening, Carla, please add anything here that you might want to add, is that once you start working with emotions, with a system such as you're putting out in the language of emotions, once you start working with them and you get a little skill, it becomes easier and faster to work through all kinds of emotional situations, and after a while you become really aware that your emotions are tools, and when they pop up you go, okay, so what are you trying to teach me? Let's work with that. Okay, I'm ready to learn, and you just kind of snap through these things, and emotions actually stop running you, and you have them work the way they're actually designed to work, which is as tools.
Yeah, that's one of the things I say is, you know, most people have two options, which is to express their emotions in a volatile way or to repress them and suppress them and shut them up. And neither of those actually work. Those are not what you do with emotions. In both cases, you're throwing them away. You know, if you're just feeling anger and you just, you know, you're like, well, screw you, that doesn't help you do what anger is supposed to be helping you do, which is to reset your boundaries, learn about vulnerability, and speak the truth without violence and hurting someone else. And when you just explode at someone, your anger is sort of like, oh, really? You know, then your anger and you are going to get in a pretty bad dance with each other. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it comes forward and you go and attack somebody. And if you learn how to work with your anger, you can calm it down and calm yourself down and say, okay, you know, a boundary's just been crossed and I've been challenged in some way. What do I do and how do I speak to this without hurting others? Then you and your anger learn how to, you know, grow up and mature together.
Mm-hmm.
The same with each of the other emotions. Instead of repressing sadness, why don't you listen to it? How would that be? Here's an idea. And then, yes, you're right. You become a friend to your emotions. They become accessible to you and not dangerous anymore and not terrifying anymore.
Huh. Yes, it's just a wonderful thing. You know, in terms of suicidal urges, my own theory for myself is that I was abandoned early on, like starting at about 6 weeks of age, and I think that in my early childhood I fought so hard to stay alive that I would never entertain the possibility of committing suicide. However, a lot of people do, and you address this in a wonderful chapter in The Language of Emotions, and you say that suicidal urges occur, quote, when the difference between who you are in your deepest self and who you've become in this world of distraction and trauma is so extreme that it can no longer be tolerated. That is a powerful statement. Will you explain that?
Suicide is my friend, okay? So we grew up together. For people who experienced a great deal of trauma, sometimes suicidal urges are really the only thing that can give you a sense of, I've got control. You know, I can get out of here. Especially for trauma that occurred in very early life when you really actually didn't have any power and you didn't have any options. The suicidal urge can come up and tell you, you know, you can get out of here, and it can be a friend in that way. But also it can be, you know, the most horrible situation you've ever had because it drags you down and it fills you with such intense despair.
Mm.
What I look at with the suicidal urge, and it's different from depression, especially situational depression, comes forward when something already isn't working and your depression, like, stops you from moving forward. And your depression says, nope, You're not going to walk any further on this path doing this thing. It's not working now, and it's not going to work in the future. So depression is kind of one of your friends who is one of your harsh friends who will tell you, you know, no, you don't need to buy that car right now. You don't have the money. Be serious. So depression is a friend that takes your fun away if your fun is going to, you know, hurt you in the long run. Suicide is related to depression and related to other emotions. Suicide is sort of a lot of emotions coming up at once. But suicide kind of steps in when things have gotten way out of hand, either physically, you know, with your neurochemistry, with your life, with your relationships, with your situation, you know, with your social situation, when things have gone completely off the rails. And in your regular world, you could not fix it. It's not fixable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For me, learning that suicide comes forward and it requires a death, to then say to it, no, you don't get to kill me. What do we want to kill? And using burning contracts with a suicide urge is one of the things that I found most helpful. Is like, okay, show me what needs to die violently, because it's not me. Utilizing the suicide urge and giving it its kill, and that might be just bizarre things like this poverty, this loneliness, this loss of meaning. It's a very specific emotion that comes out and tells you exactly what's wrong. And if you have your skills and if you understand its purpose, you can survive a suicidal urge and move forward with an intense clarity. But as we all know, many people cannot survive. I would say always, always, always call and reach out. There's free help for everyone at the National Center for Suicide, at your local crisis center. If you can simply talk it out, your suicide urge will probably recede. Suicidal urges are very responsive to sort of any kind of change. For instance, when people go to commit suicide at a bridge and someone has put a net underneath the bridge, they mm-hmm. will not go find another bridge. Any kind of a barrier that you can put in the way of a suicidal person is awesome, because the suicidal urge is a very momentary thing. Yeah, so it's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 24 hours a day, free, at 1-800-273-TALK. There is a way out of suicidal urges. I am living proof that you can go through a lot of them and gain the information and move forward.
Yes, thank you for that, because I know that's really important, and I've had people who are close to me survive suicide mm-hmm. gestures, so mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. how common it can be. Very often, and I think this is really important, very often what we do instead of dealing with our emotions is we set ourselves out on a quest to be happy or joyful. And and we think we ought to do this all the time. And you address this in the language of emotions. And you say it's both unwise and unrealistic. Why is that?
Happiness, the three happinesses that I identify, you know, there's a lot of different emotional models out there. And mine has 15 emotions. And they are similar, but I felt the emotions were different enough to talk about as different entities. In the three happiness emotions I look at, happiness, contentment, and joy, I think people want to be there all the time. But just like anger and depression and suicide and jealousy and envy, these emotions have specific jobs to do. And when it's not time for them, it is sort of a self-abusive thing to try to bring them forward and make them dance like circus ponies. I think a lot of people try to do that with their happiness. And if happiness were a person, it would say, oh, not again. Come on. I'm resting here. I just got a mint julep and, oh, no. That each of these emotions has a very specific purpose and it arises. What I say with happiness is, you know, if you love your happiness, set it free. Let it be itself and stop trying to strangle it. leave your emotions alone.
Let them come. Let them come when they're ready to come, and they will.
Happiness and contentment arise, then yay! Have a moment, and then go deal with your other emotions.
Right.
I find that when people deal with their emotions, especially the more intense ones that everyone's afraid of, happiness, contentment, and joy are there all the time. They're like, "You're awesome! You just dealt with shame. Yay for you!"
That's really great. I love your sense of play with it. Imagine, those of you who are listening, imagine having a sense of play with your own emotions. That would be really great. Well, Carla, it's just been a delight talking with you today. Let me remind people that your book is called The Language of Emotions, What Your Feelings Are Trying to Tell You. Your website is carlamclaren.com, and that's carlamclaren.com. I just want to say that I found your book. It's a long book too, but there's a lot in it, you know, and it seems really, I read a book every week, so reading a 400 page book in a week is a milestone in my life. But I did it, and I learned a lot from it, even though I've been working with emotions for many, many, many years. I learned a whole lot from you. Your book is powerful, it's detailed, it's informative, and it's practical, and I want to thank you for writing it.
Whew, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking your time to come to Full Power Living today so that we further understand what it is that you're talking about and can open to our own emotions. That's really great.
Thank you.
So do you have any final thing? I feel like there's an energy there that you may have a final thing you want to say.
Well, I'll quickly, I don't know what it is. Emotions. They have evolved over millions of years to help us become socially successful primates. They have more intelligence and energy and wisdom than you can believe until you start speaking to them as themselves and treating them with dignity and respect. They are awesome. Emotions are awesome. And if you can listen to your emotions, you will know who you are. It's that quick. Boom. I just saved you a lot of self-actualization training money.
just copy that down and repeat it to yourself. Twice a day at least.
Great. Listen to your emotions. You'll know who you are. And you'll know exactly what you want and what you need. They are that intelligent.
Great, Carla. Thank you. Next week, I want you to be sure to join me here on Full Power Living when I talk with Thelma Reese and Barbara Fleischer about how women can reinvent themselves at midlife in order to become the new senior woman. That's next Thursday, June 25th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, and we're really grateful to have you with us here at Full Power Living. Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today. Thank you for your capable and loving work, Robin. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.